And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
CD Burners, Bayside, episode number, I don't know. It's the one about Bayside.
It's probably the one about Bayside. That's probably the one that we're doing.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to CD Burners. What a day. A day of yapping, a day of DJing, a day of living our dreams, talking about music together.
I did wake up this morning and I was like, I get to do the things that I like to do today.
Yeah, these are things that
I was
we like
this
to
is
do.
What I like to do. The hardest part for me, honestly, I gotta tell you, the hardest part for me is the in-between times when we're not talking and I just have to sit here and not talk about the albums that we're going to be doing or talk about anything else because I know that I'm going to just fucking blow it.
Like when we're setting up and we're just sitting here like getting lit and, I mean, not getting like drunk, but getting lighted.
I'm getting lit.
Getting lit on some...
What the fuck is natural caffeine? Isn't that just caffeine?
I have no idea, dude.
Isn't it just like where does it... Isn't it at all forms of everything, doesn't it come from somewhere around here?
I don't know.
Like, it has to.
From the caffeine tree?
I don't know, dude. I don't see...
Doesn't it come from, like, cocoa espresso beans?
Maybe. I don't fucking know.
Where do espresso beans come from? Sounds so fucking dumb. I don't know anything about coffee.
No, I don't know. Dude, it's not even that. I'm talking about just ghosts. Like, I don't know where it comes from. I don't know where it comes from. I guarantee that nobody else fucking listening knows. Like, if you're like, hey, where does caffeine come from? I bet people will just make up some bullshit excuse.
Where
All right, let's find out.
Where does caffeine come from? Caffeine that occurs in the seeds, leaves, and nuts of many plants, including coffee, tea, cacao, cola nuts, yerba mate, guarana.
So, like, are they saying that all the other caffeine and that's...
It's unnatural.
It's unnatural. Where does that come from?
Makes no sense.
Anyway, what's up? Hi, everybody. So nice to be here. It's fucking hot as hell in this goddamn room.
It is. It is summer in Calabasas, and this is our new normal now.
I don't want to start wearing short sleeve shirts.
You got to show off the Ed Hardy shirt.
I don't want to. I think, dude, you want to know what? When we were doing, the research for the Bayside album.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I look like all these. These are the guys that like I look like.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, fuck. This is where
these are your peers.
Because they're literally like, yeah, you know, these guys are around the same age as me. We are doing Bayside, the album Bayside.
It was released August 23rd, 2005. It is the second album from Bayside. Morgan, do you want to set the scene for us a little bit?
I don't have it. Look,
you don't have
I already
scene
I feel
setting.
Like here's the thing.
We always talk about the same years.
I know, that's like we also are doing another album that was like the same years as the ones we've been talking about. But 2005, that was dark.
I could set the scene a little bit.
Yeah, you do it.
Okay, so 2005 was by far the biggest year for emo and pop punk, as we've talked about on previous episodes. Warped Tour, that was the highest attended year. MySpace was popping off. Fall Out Boy was blowing up. My Chemical Romance. Everybody was like crossing over into the mainstream. You had seen this sort of like pop punk boom, like 2002, 2003, that had now segued over to full blown mall emo.
Yeah, like radio, like alternative radio.
Yeah.
Because wasn't 2002 ish when.
Like Simple Plan.
Like a Newfound Glory or like MTV, like height TRL shit.
The bands that weren't My Chemical Romance, the bands that weren't Fall Out Boy, the ones that weren't on TRL, they were probably at the peak of their popularity, but they were grinding. And a lot of bands, Bayside being one of them, are what we would call like a blue collar band. Like, they were signed to Victory Records, so they weren't making any fucking money off of their albums.
Because we learned all about Victory. We should do a fucking deep dive into Victory.
We should do a deep dive into Victory. You know, it was like Bayside, you had like Silverstein, you had Hawthorne Heights, you had Aiden. You had like,
bro, hold on. So there's a fucking there's this house party this house that we all used to party at.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you've seen what Aiden looks like.
No.
So there was like the only picture in this house was a picture of Aiden on the refrigerator, and it was because they look like look up what Aiden looks like, and there's one of the dudes in the band that's just like. So it looks like where South Park got like the scene,
like those like goths
kids from, yeah. Like, but it
these guys,
yeah, you gotta find like that's young. Probably like newer, yeah. It's like young Aiden because it was like there was the it was so fuck
like that,
dude. I don't know. There's one dude in that band that like I remember every time I'd go reach for a beer, I would be like, fuck, you know, every single time, and that's like the.
Aiden himself?
It's, yeah, one of the, yeah, like, dude, it's like that, that's the, I looked at that picture every fucking time I opened and reached the refrigerator to get a beer, and that was the only thing in that house, and that's all I remember, and I never
it's
heard,
the only thing
the
in the
only
house.
Thing in the house, and I never heard a goddamn Aiden song in my life.
I actually couldn't name an Aiden song either, but yeah, anyway, they were sort of part of that sort of working class of bands that had to tour to make money. And that was like the only source of income they really had. And they were hustling and they were playing as many shows as possible. They were just touring nonstop. And at the end of the day, like every band member would walk out of the year with like $24,000. It was like the blue collar grind for these bands.
I'm gonna be real on this one.
Be real.
I don't know shit about Bayside. The thing is, I was worried to do this episode because of how little I knew about Bayside.
So I agree with you because I also didn't know much about Bayside. Still, there's not that much out there. But I will tell you, I've seen Bayside probably like 5 times, like against my will, because they were the opener. They toured so much. They got on so many tours. I remember going to literally every show and I would be like, are you serious? Bayside again? Like I saw them so many times. And it's because they were part of this working class group of bands that just grinded and toured nonstop in vans.
Meredith has seen Bayside. One of the girls, you guys probably know Meredith if you follow Emo Night at all. She's on all of our socials. She's the best. I was like, hey, you know anything about Bayside? And she's like, I mean, only besides the fact I've seen them more than any band I've ever seen in my entire life. And that seems to kind of be the general consensus. I hit up a bunch of people. I was like, yo, do you know anything about this band? Do you know anything about this band? Everybody's like, no. All I know is that one of the ladies that works with us, Bayside is her favorite band.
Yeah, Logan.
Logan. It's her favorite band.
She loves them. And I kind of like, I had a chip on my shoulder from the beginning, like even back in 2005. I would be like, are you serious? Like, I have to see Bayside again. I've seen them. And so their frequency made me dislike them, honestly. It made me never like take a deep dive into Bayside because they were on every tour and I saw them so much that I got annoyed.
I mean, here's the thing. I grouped them in with all of the bands that I thought that they sounded like, right? And so when we went back and listened to this, it didn't sound anything like what I imagined that they would sound like. And I'm sure I've heard Bayside songs millions of times, and I just never really picked up on it. But the thing that's really interesting about them is that they were a band, like you said, they toured with everybody. They did that circuit. They did like all of the shit that they could do. The thing is, they were a band that every other band seems to really, really like and really, really fuck with. And when I say that, I mean like these people seem to be like very good friends with Bayside. And that to me, and then so I started to be like, all right, why is that? Like, why is that? And then I listened to a couple of interviews with Anthony. He's a really great guy. I kind of fucking flip-flopped a little bit because I was like, all right, I listened to this. I know what it sounds like. I listened to this guy talk. He sounds like a great guy. Sounds like a really good dude. And so I can understand why. And he put in a lot of dues. He like fucking, I think he did merch for.
I think he still owns a merch company.
He did merch for Brand New.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he did merch for Brand New. Awesome. Don't care. Love Brand New. Fuck you. And he did merch for, hold on, let me pull up my notes here.
Does he own Merch Direct?
I think maybe.
That, or is that the Glassjaw guys?
I don't know. But he did merch for.
Merch Now?
He did the Strider. He did merch for the Strider.
Merch Now.
God, September is it? And that's one of those other weird bands where I was like, I wouldn't know them if you did it. And then I really liked a Strider song. So they literally know everybody. Bayside, I feel like they know everybody.
Something happened while they were out touring. Like I said, they were out grinding. They were playing shows nonstop. They were in a van. And something happened that was sort of like a wake-up call for the scene where everybody started being like, whoa, maybe we need to slow it down. Maybe instead of playing 10 shows in a row, we could do like 3 and then take a day off and then do 4 and then take a day off. Bayside was on tour with Hawthorne Heights, Silverstein, Spitalfield. It was called the Never Sleep Again Tour. It was all Victory Records bands. And Halloween night, they have to make this treacherous drive from Denver to Salt Lake City. And if you've ever done that drive, it's scary. So these guys are in a, I don't know, 8-12-passenger van making this trip across Cheyenne, Wyoming. They even said they were worried about it. Like, they were having conversations with the other bands before they left. They're like, I don't know about our tires. Somewhere along the way, around Cheyenne, their van flips. They fly off the road, and it is a devastating accident. Their drummer at the time, John Holohan, he was killed instantly. Nick Bayside, friend of the pod, he broke his spine, had to go back to Florida, get surgery. It was a brutal moment for the scene. And I actually remember this because I think I was supposed to go to the Salt Lake City show. And they had to cancel the Salt Lake City show. They canceled 5 tour dates after that. Tony from Victory flew out every member of the touring party back to Long Island to go to the funeral. And all the bands were like, hold on, like, let's pump the brakes here for a second. But because they were in the mindset of like, we have to keep going, we have to make money, Anthony and the other guitarist hopped back on the tour and played acoustic for the rest of the time. They hopped in Silverstein's bus. They continued on the tour. And before they were able to rejoin the tour, Hawthorne Heights actually would just do 30 minutes of silence in the spot where Bayside was supposed to perform. It wasn't silence, but it was just a dead stage.
Really? Like a changeover, but they like let them.
JT would come out and be like, hey, you know, Bayside had a tragic car accident. They're supposed to be here tonight. John passed away. We're going to do a dead stage here in their honor for 30 minutes. And he said that it was at the, he felt like he had to do that because the internet at the time, like news didn't travel as fast. So people were like finding out about it still. And they actually got every single venue except for one to donate their merch cut.
Which venue?
I don't know. They didn't name names, but pretty much 99 out of 100 or whatever, it wasn't 100 dates, but 99% of the venues donated their merch cut to help Bayside get a new van and get back on their feet because they lost everything. They lost their van and all their equipment. They had tons of medical expenses, all this shit.
I would be really interested to know what venue that is and if they're still around.
JT said, I have never like yelled at anybody the way that I yelled at those people when they came and asked for the merch cut. I can't imagine JT yelling at anybody, like that's totally,
you know, what track it's really cool that tracks with JT, like for being a fucking solid guy. And even, you know, back then, like the 2000, you know, that's 20 years ago.
At the end of the tour, actually, JT Hawthorne Heights bought Bayside a new van completely separate of,
yeah, that rocks.
Of, you know, the donations and everything that they had gotten from the merch cut. Hawthorne Heights surprised Bayside with a new van. And I guess the last show of this tour was in Chicago. And that's where Victory HQ was. So like all Victory staff was there, and it was this like super emotional end to the tour.
I mean, I didn't do a lot of research on that because I figured you would. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, all right, I know what you're going to focus on. And I was like, I don't know anything about Bayside, and I'm going to learn about Bayside.
What did you learn about Bayside?
Well, you'll never guess where they're from.
Schlong Island.
Bayside.
Bayside, Schlong Island.
That's where I'm from.
Oh, yeah?
Did you know that that's my first house, my parents' first house, was in Bayside, Queens?
Oh.
Yeah, it's in Queens. And then I remember exactly where it was. We actually went and played Webster Hall one day, like a couple years ago, and I had never gone back and looked at where I grew up. Like, I remember it in my mind, but that's when you're so little that everything looks humongous and big and like overwhelming, and especially with a brain like mine, which is just fucked, where you have like an overactive imagination. I was like, I'm gonna go back and like see if I can remember the things that I think I recall. And my parents gave me the address of both of the houses. One was in Bayside and one was in Little Neck. And I went to the Bayside house, and I fucking shit you not, I remember it being really, really big. It was probably about the size of this fucking room that we're in right now.
Really?
Yeah. It was really, really wild. And then I went into the Little Neck house, and I was going to knock on the door. I knocked on the door to see if anybody was home, to see if I could go in and remember the layout of it.
I'm sure somebody's going to answer their door for you.
Dude, that's the thing. It's like, I already had like a prepared speech. I was like, hey, I'm not going to rob you. I'm not insane. I know this sounds insane, but I used to live here and like a long time ago, and I just want to like see if I remember the things correctly.
Yeah.
And I remember, dude, I circled that house. Like, I went in the back, I hopped the fence, I went in the backyard. Nobody was home. And so I stood, it was really strange, outside of the Bayside house. And you know me, I'm not a crier. Like, I'm not like, I just don't cry a bunch. And I remember standing outside of that Bayside house and just like tearing up, and then did the same thing at the Little Neck house.
Was this when you went to the Sopranos convention?
It might have been when I went to the Sopranos convention. Like, I took a couple days in New York by myself, and then I went to New Jersey to go see the Sopranos convention, and I also cried there. It was like the fucking, but that was because I was like, this is so awesome. But it was really strange. I didn't know that the thing about Anthony is he's basically my age, a little older than me, grew up in the same place that I grew up in. What was interesting is that in his teens, he stayed in New York, and I didn't. I moved. I went to Tucson, and he got to experience that, what, like, punk.
I mean, that scene is, like, the scene.
Yeah, punk and hardcore in New York, like, all of that. And that, like, in the Bowery and, like, all that area. And, you know, I heard him tell stories about it and, you know, who he was influenced by and what it was like. And he just seems such a great guy that I went back and listened to the Bayside album again. And then I was like, all right, I like it. The thing about Bayside, and the reason why I was like, I don't know what the fuck this is, because I can assume what it sounds like. It sounds like everything, all the other shit. It does not.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It doesn't. It sounds, it's like, it's rock. It's rock. It's rock music. It's like not emo. It's not pop punk.
Yeah.
It's not any of that. It's like close to rock music. What I think that they did is influenced a bunch of the bands. I heard now the bands that I like that are pop punk and emo adjacent that wouldn't be that influenced by Bayside. So I think
like who?
Bands like Sorority Noise and like Menzingers and shit like that,
yeah.
Like where it's like adjacent, but not quite there.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that like the Mets and shit like that. Like all of those bands that I'm like pop, you know, kind of too.
Yeah. It's almost like Midwest emo. People that I feel like now people call it Midwest emo, but this was actually like emo. I would say that like you had like mainstream emo, like the Fall Out Boys and the My Chems. And then you had like bands like, I want to say like Thrice and like Thursday and Bayside that were making emo that was not pop.
Like, I mean, there's parts where, like, you know, I've had this argument so many goddamn times where I think that you can take any piece of music and be like, that is emo for some reason. Sure. Where, you know, and the reason why where I got to this is I was like, dude, they were just fucking cool. And they were around all of these bands. They just liked playing. They liked touring. And so being around that same time, and it's kind of the same, it's like the 303 effect, right? Like, you kind of came up. You're part of the scene. And I think Bayside, you know, looking back, was a really instrumental part of the scene because it was kind of the glue that, like, held a lot of these friendships together.
That's so true, yeah.
It was really cool. It was really cool to, but I just never, you know, I never got into them because I always assumed that I knew what they sound like because of the bands that, who they were touring with.
Sure.
And then I was wrong, you know? Happy to admit it. You guys heard it here first that I was wrong.
That's the first time, I think,
ever. And will be the last time that you guys ever hear that I'm wrong.
What are some of your standout tracks?
I really liked Blame It on Bad Luck. I like that song. I did like that song. It's probably my favorite song off of the album. The thing that was hard to do was hard to separate myself from thinking that it was going to be one thing.
Okay.
And when it's actually another thing.
You had a preconceived notion.
That's what it was. Yeah. And so, like, I had to, like, switch my mindset when I went back and listened to it again.
Yeah.
Because when I put it on the first time, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, Devotion and Desire, that's a classic song. Obviously, it was the single off the album. It's their most streamed song on Spotify. It's got 29 million streams.
It's a lot. Huge. That's a lot of streams.
Yeah. A lot of the lyrics on this album are pretty fucking violent, and they've been criticized for being misogynistic.
Shut up.
I know. A couple of years ago, during all of that, I believe Bayside did issue an apology or something on their socials.
God, this is fucking like, dude, it's like getting mad at like a movie.
I'll grab your head by your hair and I'd hack it off and put it on display on the front of the yard,
okay,
on a stick that's decorated with a little pink bow and a sign that says, her friends and family should have taught her more about love.
Okay, everybody go listen to one Cannibal Corpse song and then fucking, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I mean, it's pretty fucking brutal, but it's poetry, you know?
Favorite Cannibal Corpse song, it's not my favorite one, but my favorite title is Fucked with a Knife. it's so fucking, dude, it's so funny because the dude from Cannibal Corpse, his name is George Corpse Grinder Fisher, I want to say, something like that. I don't know his last name, but his Instagram is him like going to Disneyland with his kids, and he's like just the most like wholesome like family man guy. And then it's like you look at the song titles and you hear their band, and it's just like I love it when that shit happens. But I mean, look, it's art. I'm never going to be mad at art for doing it unless it's aimed at or purposefully at something.
Sure.
Or causes a thing, you know, like, and doing it on purpose. But, like, dude, listen to any of these fucking bands' lyrics. You can get mad at any. You can get mad. Look, everybody, you guys can get mad at stuff if you really want to. You can try and make yourself mad. It's really easy. You can pick one thing and then get really mad at it. You can do it.
Yep.
You can pick one thing and then figure out a reason to get mad at it. Or you don't have to do that because it affects nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Interestingly enough, diving into the liner notes, this album was produced by a production duo, Shep Goodman and Kenny Gioa. Shep Goodman and Kenny Gioa, and they recorded it at Shepherd Music in New York City. And these guys have some interesting credits, not in the scene.
Let's hear it.
Mandy Moore.
Really?
LFO. Jonas Brothers. Aaron Carter. And then in the scene, they have stuff like 4 Years Strong, Cute Is What We Aim For, Mr. Wives, and then Young Rising Sons. Joni put on here because she just toured with them.
It's a pretty interesting roster.
Their breakout song was Leanne Womack, I Hope You Dance.
This is pretty, like...
pretty cool, though.
Yeah, like, pretty, like, wide range of shit.
Yeah.
LFO?
Yeah.
Summer?
I don't know if they did Summer Girls, but they did something with LFO.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I have some stuff. There's a lot of stuff that I really did like about Bayside. Like, this dude loves bagels. He works at a he worked at a ton of bagel stores. Another cool thing about them is that they met on a message board. I think he just was like, hey, who wants to be in a band? You know, people put I'm looking for a bass player and it sounds like X and we want to be this on the telephone poles. This was the beginning of, hey, I'm looking for a band. And that's it's the internet, the telephone pole of the internet, you know, and that's kind of a cool thing. They got signed to Victory the old fashioned way. They fucking sent him a demo, and then Victory was like, yeah, all right, let's do it, which is it's part of the thing that I think that makes Bayside cool. Like, they're a band, then they like bands like them, they like touring, they like playing, they like doing all this stuff. They sent in a fucking album to a record label and got signed. Like, that's it's kind of this the thing you think of, and when you're growing up playing in music and you're like, I'm gonna do that, that's cool. You know, they there was, like TJ was saying, like there was aggressive lyrics, but there was no screaming like some of the other artists around that time, and especially the bands that they were touring with, you know, like Hawthorne Heights. There was aggressive music, aggressive lyrics that we just kind of heard, but no screaming. Everybody seems to really love Anthony's voice a lot. Not my thing, but guess what? Doesn't mean that everybody is allowed to like what they like. And I like that about the world. So fuck on you. He was also like, I think why I relate to this dude so much is like, he was a lot like me, it was right around the time where we kind of found out about Nirvana, but at the same time kind of found out about NOFX. And so we were just in this, do we like alternative? Do we like punk? Are we those things? What do we relate to more? And I think that that's where Bayside kind of came out of. It was like, it's kind of a little bit of A and B. So they also they did a lot of stuff, and they reminded me of like I said, around the same age. They played a lot of shows in libraries and cafeterias, and you know, they were really close with Newfound Glory.
I heard that they got their name because they were on their way to drop off a demo to Newfound Glory, and they didn't have a name for the band, and he just saw the subway station sign and wrote down Bayside.
Yeah, which is I think that's another reason why I kind of wrote them off. Remember when bands were just we're the name of a place?
Yeah.
Evergreen Terrace.
Greeley
Heights. Yeah, it's just
Greeley Estates.
I kind of fucking backed away around that time and didn't think that there was that those bands had anything of substance. But I was, again, probably wrong, because I'm sure some of those fucking bands are awesome. But it was just the thing that I couldn't get into personally. The thing that they do have is, I think they were one of the first bands that was people started really getting traditional style tattoos. I have a sparrow,
yes,
with Bayside lyric.
Yeah, they have that's their logo. They have the Bayside sparrow.
Yeah, it's they were the first, and that was when back when you know how I have all these shitty new traditional tattoos that have neon and shit on them?
Sure.
This was a little bit before that, because I was too much of a pussy to get it when I was, I guess it was kind of the same time, but it was they kind of were the resurgence of traditional tattooing, that period. So you can always date somebody on how old they are with what style of tattoos they have, which is really interesting. It's a really, because I can know, I'd be like, you're a real one. You started getting them back then, or you have a couple fucking scribbles on you.
Tattoo guy inside scoop.
Yeah, I mean, I can always tell.
You know what's trend, the trends of the time.
I can always tell, you know? And so that is another cool thing about it. I'm sure that everybody has got a ton of fucking other band tattoos, but I mean, they were really in that new traditional style tattoo thing.
What the heck is this? Singer of punk band Bayside helps detectives nab Florida man accused of sexual battery.
What?
Bayside frontman Anthony Ranieri used social media to assist in nabbing tattoo artist James Ranieri.
What? Is it his brother?
Detectives arrested the suspect after a three-month investigation, which began after an Instagram post by Ranieri. Anthony, I assume. In the post, the punk rock frontman explained that a Jacksonville tattoo artist named James Ranieri was apparently posing as his cousin to gain favor with women. It has come to my attention that a tattooer named from Solid State Tattoo in Jacksonville is telling women that he's my cousin. This isn't true. I don't know this person. After making the post, Ranieri was flooded with messages by women who claimed they had been assaulted or contacted by James Ranieri. Taking matters into his own hands, Anthony Ranieri contacted the Jacksonville mayor's office and was put in touch with the state attorneys and sheriff. A detective was then put on. It's like a whole thing. Wow, they like really fucking nailed this guy.
Dude, so that's so nuts because that's kind of what I did to somebody who has the similar name as me.
Who?
Morgan Freeman.
How did you do that? What did you do?
I had him arrested for pretending to get pussy. Because he was related to me.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's a little known story.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just went in. I went and they, you know, and they do have like a Bayside does have like they do have a cult following. They have like, you know, it's called the Bayside Cult.
Yeah. That was their URL for a while. Baysideisacult.com.
Yeah. And they do have that. Like the people that are about them are really about them. You know, I went into some Reddit shit. Like, look, I'll have some Reddit quotes that I can read off of. And I think it kind of really describes, I think it gives a really good well-rounded bird's eye view of Bayside. In my opinion, they are much more on the rock side of punk versus the pop side. They are generally heavier and it causes, in a lot of cases, they have more traditional rock style mixed with punk. Open chords, guitar solos. They also don't have your typical pop punk lyrics about coming of age or teenage themes, which, while this lyrical style certainly isn't limited to teenagers, it skews their fan base a little bit older. So, to anyone out there who sort of likes Bayside and never seen them live, do it. They are one of the best bands I've ever seen live. Period, regardless of the genre, which is
how could you not see them live?
And everybody's seen them live. There's another one. Yeah, I love fucking Bayside, but I don't really think of them as a pop punk. They're one of those sort of outlier bands which share the same fan base, even though they're quite different. Looking at my Bayside as a cult wall flag, I think I love Bayside quite a bit. I always try to praise them whenever I can. They're in a class of their own, in my opinion. Not a single bad album. They're just consistently good. I have some quotes.
From more Reddit people?
No, I think it's from one of the dudes in the band. His name is Jack O'Shea. Okay. This is a really good one. We were never part of a scene or trend. We never looked or sounded like the way anybody else did, and we never partnered up with companies or brands, and that was totally by design. You know, the weird thing is, back when we weren't really fitting into a category, we kind of had been called a pop punk band or an emo band, and we even sometimes had a difficult time on tours where we were usually considered the odd man out.
Maybe that's why I didn't really like them, because they were like so different than everything I was seeing them with.
That's the thing. At least I figured out why.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and that's, to me at least, that's a really important thing to do, is if you're like, look, I can go into something and be like, fuck, this sucks. I hate it. I don't like it.
Yeah, but that's not what this podcast is about.
But I went in. You can do that about anything.
Sure.
And then you can be like, if you actually take a, you know, do a tiny, look, I probably spent like 5-6 hours researching Bayside over the course of a couple of days. And I got to the point where I was like, I do like this. I understand where it's coming. I understand. And I was able to see things from a perspective that wasn't my own opinion.
That's great. Everybody should do more of that in every aspect of your life.
I still don't really love the album, but I can see why people do.
Fair enough. We kind of talked about it a little bit already. If you like this, you might like that. You said the Menzingers, Sorority Noise.
I also have a couple other ones too that he name taken was a band that like I think some of my friends sang on one of those albums, and I remember really, really liking it. And then I listened to this podcast where he picked two songs that influenced him, or like two bands that influenced him, and Smoking Popes, which is like a band that I never really got into, but they played a song and I was like, this is fucking tight. And I went back and listened to a bunch of Smoking Popes and I was like, this is cool. I like this.
I've never listened to the Smoking
Popes. Yeah. See, I would have never put it on because yeah. I was
the only thing I know about the Smoking Popes is one time you and I Babs did an interview with Ted Stryker on K-Rock when we first started Emo Night. And he's like, well, so what is Emo Night? What bands could be played at Emo Night? I'm going to name some. And you tell me if they can get played. And he's like, My Chem. Like, yeah. Fall Out Boy. Yeah. He's like, Smoking Popes. And I was like, no.
No. I mean, like, that's no. But,
and then after that, I remember you said to me, Smoking Nopes. And I always think of the Smoking Nopes now.
See, it's good that your brain isn't made of cottage cheese, because like I forget stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you can bring that back to me. Yeah, Smoking Nopes.
There is not a time that I read the Smoking Popes like name and don't say to myself, the Smoking Nopes.
Where did you land on bands? If you like this, you like that.
Dude, you know what I realized?
What?
Bayside sounds so much like Alkaline Trio.
That's the thing. It's like, I love Alkaline Trio.
Yeah.
Like, and I got into Alkaline Trio. I like really got into Alkaline Trio, and I guess, yeah, I can see it.
To me, they are the same vibe. Also, oddly enough, like, I feel like the production style on this album, it's pretty similar, I think, to Brand New, Your Favorite Weapon.
I mean, that
obviously
was
there's
one
like
the
a
ones...
lot more like power chords, and like it is more pop punk songwriting for Brand New, but it's got that like same grit to it.
I mean, I think they're friends, you know what I mean? I think it's hard to not be influenced by the people that you're around. And so that makes total sense. I had that written down, but I was like, the more I listened to it, I was like, maybe not. Maybe I can give a band that like, I don't know. That's all I got on Bayside.
Stay tuned for our interview with Anthony Ranieri from Bayside.
I'm excited to talk to him.
Hopefully we get his ass.
After listening to him, I like really, really excited. And I'm going to go into it. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go, I don't know shit about your band, bro. Like, you got to tell me. And I really want to know, because now I like him.
All right. Hello, Anthony. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome to CD Burners. We appreciate you getting on with us. This is going
to
be...
Yeah, it's good to see you guys. It's been a while.
Dude. This is cool. We did a lot of research for this album, and you in particular.
Cool.
Yeah. I listened to like so many interviews with you. The thing that I got the most out of it is, like, this guy rocks. He's like a nice guy. Like people, people really, really fuck with you. And, I think out of everything, that's a really, you know, that's like an incredible quality to have, especially for just be this,
cool,
the scene
you.
That we're in.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think, you know, I think that, we should be inspirational, you know, anybody, like if you've got any kind of a platform, like maybe be, you know, being kind to everybody, maybe that rubs off and then, you know, other people might pick up on it and say, you know what? I want to be a nice guy. You know, it's nice. Everybody likes a nice guy.
It made me absolutely like, you know, rethink me sending like an email after I was listening to. I was like, I'm not gonna be a dick today after listening to these things with you. But dude, so like, you know, we started this podcast to take a look into what it was like at the times of when these albums were coming out. You know, personally and culturally. And so I know you've probably gone over this a billion times, but if you could just, you know, paint a little picture of what your life was like, what it was like for the band and the recording process of this first album that you guys put out.
Yeah, it was really it was a really exciting time in my life. You know, the band, it was our second record. The band had just started to get a little bit of traction. We had been touring for like 4 or 5 years at that point. But like,
my bad, just, second record.
What's that? Yeah.
My bad. Like, I think I said
people like had just kind of, we had been touring for like 4 or 5 years, but people had just like actually started coming to our shows at that point. It's funny. It's the first record we made that we thought in the context that people are actually going to hear this, you know, because when we made our first record, when we did demos and EPs, and then we did our first full length, like we didn't have any fans, you know what I mean? So it was just kind of like, cool, we'll make, you know, we're making a record. That's cool. But then, you know, we started making fans by this point. So it was the first time we made a record ever thinking like that there was an audience to make it for, which I think sort of caused us to like approach it maybe a little bit differently. When I look back on it now, I was 22 when we made that record. I'm 42 now. When I look back on it now, it was a really like chaotic time in my life, but I didn't know it then. It was, you know, it was like, we were touring like 10 months out of the year. I was never home, different city every day. Like we had no crew. We were driving a van all over the country, like loading gear in, sleeping on people's floors, writing records. Like, you know, we would play a show and then we'd go crash at somebody's house and I'd have an acoustic guitar and I was like writing this record like on strangers' couches. And then we went straight into the studio to make it and, you know, just broke as hell. So it was so chaotic, but I didn't know like that was just like my life then. And I like as far as I knew, that would be my life forever. I didn't think like I thought that was just it now.
Do you look back at that? I mean, I you know, we're around the same age and I feel really similar to you as looking back at like that part of my life, not realizing that it was chaos. And every day I wake up and I go, I miss that. And then I like get 20 minutes into my day and I go, I don't miss that.
Oh yeah.
I go back and forth, man.
Yeah. I think it's really easy to like romanticize, times in your life, you know, especially like chaotic times. I wouldn't go back to it, you know, for sure. I definitely wouldn't go back to it, but, it was, you know, it was an interesting time. It's like, you don't know like that you're living in this like amazing season, like while you're in it, you know, you look back and you're like, wow, like what a fucking trip that was, but you never know while it's happening.
I think, you know, at least for me now I have a little bit of like insight on being alive. I try and savor the moments, like, you know, everyday moments and be like, you're going to remember this, you know, as opposed to like being 22. There's no way you could be like, remember this thing.
Sure. Well, I'm sure it's similar because this was like a really, you know, like I said, it was like the time in our career when we first started making fans and getting traction and like this dream, I guess, was becoming a reality, you know? But we were just working so hard. We were like in this whirlwind of work that we didn't know that we were getting anywhere. You know what I mean? Because we were just so focused on running the marathon that like we didn't realize that we had made any progress really. But I mean, it's probably similar like to when you guys started Emo Night, you know, and it like took off and you know, and it, all the press it was getting and everybody talking about it. And I'm sure like you look back on it now to think like how crazy of a time that was, but I'm sure you were too busy fucking juggling the thing to realize like what a moment it was, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Dude, part of me, when we were going through this, like I was remembering how many times I just saw you guys play. Like you guys were, and still are, one of the hardest working bands in the scene. Like I feel like you opened every tour, you know?
Yeah.
And like you said, you were just out there grinding 10 months of the year. You were such a big part of the scene and you were surrounded by so many, you know, incredible bands that are your friends and peers. How did you sort of, I feel like, you know, this album doesn't sound like anything else that was happening at the time.
Yeah.
And you know, like you said, you went into this thinking like, this is the first time like people are actually listening, people are paying attention. How did you sort of, you know, stay in your own lane to make such a unique record when you were surrounded by so much other stuff and like not succumb to trying to do something somebody else is doing?
I don't, you know, I think it's partially like who we were and are as people. It's sort of like a, like, like an, I don't know if it's like a East Coast mentality, a New York mentality, where we were just kind of like fuck everyone. You know what I mean? Like we're going to do our thing. But like, I think that our influences for sure, you know, like I've always been into like show tunes and like vocal jazz and stuff. And there's a lot of that influence in these records. And Jack has always been into jazz and metal. And there's a lot of that influence on that record. Our drummer, John Beats at the time was into like hip hop. He had never, when he joined the band and we made this record, we made this record a few months after he joined the band. He didn't know who Taking Back Sunday was. He didn't know who he'd never heard any of our contemporaries, you know? So we were pulling influences from so many different places, you know? So it's just like, we were just doing like what we know. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't hard to not fitting in at the time. We watched like a lot of bands pop up that were, that came after us that were like perfect for the moment. And they just sort of like passed us right by, you know, we just felt like there was years of grinding it out, and a band would put out like their first record and go on their first tour and they'd be killing it, you know? And that was hard for us to watch. But it really did us a lot of favors. Next year is our 25th year as a band, and being unique and not being perfect for the era, I think is what helped us not become like a trope of the times, you know. I think that our music has shown that there's like some longevity in it. So we sort of had to pay the price of like not getting bigger earlier and not being as big as like our contemporaries got at that time. But the dividends are coming now, you know?
Can I ask like why you think that everybody, like your contemporaries, like why they did fuck with you guys? Like why, since you sounded so different, why do you think that you were so well embraced in a scene that didn't particularly sound like you guys?
I think that like they appreciated the musicianship, you know. I think they appreciated the songwriting and the musicianship, and we've always like taken our live shows really seriously. We always want to fucking kick, just be a kick-ass wreck rock band, you know? And I think that a lot of our contemporaries at least, appreciated that about us. It did take a long time, for like the fans of our contemporaries to come around to us. Like we were doing, like you said, we used to open every tour. We did so many support tours, and we used to come off those tours like feeling no bigger than when we went on the tour, you know, because we weren't like the perfect fit for anyone, you know? But like I said, you know, it was a tougher road, but like it has paid off. And we have always looked at, like when we started the band and we got signed and we were making these early records, we always said like, we want to be Bad Religion. We want to be Dropkick Murphys, you know, and we never want to risk, like every photo shoot, every album cover, every song, everything we always did, we always said like, will we be embarrassed about this in 10 years? Is this going to like, is this timeless? Is this like, we just wanted a long career. We always tried to make decisions to that would lead us to being, you know, Bad Religion or Dropkick Murphys. We never wanted to bet the farm to try to become Fall Out Boy. We just like, we were down for the slow and steady.
It's funny that you mentioned those two bands, because like one of the things that I specifically remember listening to one of your interviews is like your influence by Fat Mike and like your chord progressions and all this shit, like the way that he does it and the way that you do it. And I never really put those two things together. And then like after, you know, I've been a big fan of those guys for so long, you know, and then like going back and listening to this album, I'm like, oh, I hear it. And I would have never really put that together considering it was like a different, it was a really huge different, it was like a kind of a different scene, kind of the same scene. Like I grew up, you know, from what I've heard, you know, you talk about, I'm actually from Bayside, and I grew up like pretty, yeah. And then I moved to Little Neck.
I grew up in Little Neck. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, I was, my childhood house was in Bayside, and then like my other childhood house is in Little Neck, and then
that's crazy. I don't know how. I never knew that.
I mean, I don't, not something I have no idea how you wouldn't know that, but it was like very interesting, like listening to we have really similar things that we were inspired by growing up, and the fact that you found your way into this scene and I also found my way into this scene is, I was like, there's a lot of really strange connections. But I want to give, you know, this podcast is very much about what this album was like for you. What was it like for you touring on this album at the time personally? And what did you want to get out of this album when you went to record, like go into the studio to record it?
Well, this was the first album that we did with Shep Goodman. And so we did the first album, was produced by Jay Robbins from Jawbox. And, you know, Jawbox is a certain type of band. Jay Robbins was a certain type of songwriter, and, it wasn't a perfect fit for me because I've always like been sort of a student of pop music. And I've always like really wanted to have those pop sensibilities in my writing. So Shep came from like the rock world originally, but when we met him, he was coming off of doing like Mandy Moore and Aaron Carter and LFO and shit like that. So he really schooled me on how to write songs like a pop writer. But when I say that, I mean like how to get into the listener's head, like how to know what you're trying to, like how to write a song and know what you're trying to accomplish and think like a listener.
And is that something that you didn't do with the album previously?
Like,
is
no, this, is yeah, like a- I was just throwing paint on a canvas, you know what I mean? But like up until this point, I was just throwing paint on a canvas. I would just pick up a guitar and I'd bang around on it. And I remember going into the studio on the first record with songs that didn't have choruses, you know what I mean? And like Jay Robbins being like, why don't we pick the best part and repeat it at least once, you know? And like, but writing the self-titled record with Shep, who was like a real, you know, master of songwriting, he really taught me like why we have choruses, why we have intros, why we, you know, and why there's, you know, you look at like, you got to be a student of songwriting to be a great songwriter. You know what I mean? Like there are people who get by on just picking up an instrument and playing something till it sounds good. But I think to be a real master, you got to like, you know, what makes Nirvana Nirvana? You know what I mean? Like what, like you take something from Nirvana, you take like the heavy and light, right? You take like the mellow verses into the big choruses and like you start to understand what that does to the listener. Why do we get louder in the chorus? Why do we, or you look at somebody like Max Martin who like will start a melody here in the range and then step up a little bit in the pre and then soar in the chorus. And like you start approaching it that way. And then the real greats can take those formulas and take those principles of songwriting and then add artistry to it, you know? And if you can do both, that's the dream.
Is that no idea going into, you know, being 22, like this is like a brand new concept for you. Like that was like,
yeah, totally. And I started listening to music like when, you know, with this record, with self-titled record, with Walking Wounded is when I started listening to music with a pen and paper and like listening to other songs and thinking, I really liked what just happened. Why did I like that? What just happened? What did it do? You know?
Yeah. What did it do for you?
Yeah. Yeah. Like what just happened in the song that gave me that feeling? What's different about this part than the last part that gave me that feeling? And like this record, we started experimenting. It was the first time we started experimenting with like key changes. And that came very much from listening to other stuff and thinking like, what's different? And then thinking like, oh shit, they're playing the same. They just modulated this chorus where it's higher than the last time they did the chorus. Like that's, and it gave me this feeling, you know? So it was really like started. It was the beginning of me becoming like a student of songwriting.
And how did you get connected with Shep? Was that somebody that you just found like from a label book?
So randomly, actually. Yeah. We were in between managers, and this woman whose name I don't even remember managed us for like maybe a month. And she was like, you should meet Shep. And like, she introduced me to Shep. I just had dinner with Shep last night, you know, like literally like last night I was out with Shep. So, and so this is like a 20 year, like mentorship that has like come from this, like, so like really random woman whose name I can't even remember that introduced us like 20 years ago.
Did you remember? Were you like, did you guys talk about it? Were you like, you remember that lady?
I think he knew her more. I think he had worked on other things with her. So I think that he might remember her name. I'll have to ask him the next time I see him.
Dude, it's honest. It's like so difficult, you know, we see so many people, and especially like seeing so many people being so many places all of the time, like to remember, I'm bad with everything. I don't remember anybody. Dude, you should see like what is written, how like TJ knows how I write down like numbers in my phone. I have to describe everybody to a, like, it's sentences long of me explaining how I know that person, why, you know, what they look like the connection I have. And I'm like, all right, I get it. Like, if that person texts me. So I understand, dude, 20 years is a long time.
Yeah, like, man, there's only so much room in your, brain. You know what I mean? And I'm trying to remember, like, you know, who like, I have to remember like who mixed Nevermind, but I also have to like, what was Derek Jeter's batting average in like 99? Like I have so much information I'm trying to keep in there.
Listen to this segue. Ready? Speaking of memories, like I think what's really interesting about, at least to me in regards to this podcast, is, you know, I would love people to hear things or memories or feelings that they can't read or listen to or know anywhere else. Like, what about this album or that time in your life, you know, really stands out to you or as like a core memory or instances or moments that, you know, maybe you haven't talked about, or, you know, now looking back and reflecting on it, like, yeah, you come out of it with like a little bit more clarity and be like, that was fucking sick, or that was cool. And I didn't really appreciate that at the time. And now I do,
you know, like something I thought about like recently was like, there were times in my life that, like in my career, that I felt so close to like making it and I wasn't. And there are times in my life where I felt so far away from making it and I wasn't, you know, like, and it's funny, like when you work, when you have a career, and I don't know that it necessarily has to be a creative career, but when you have a career that you're passionate about, that you truly like love, you just have your head down, you know, you have your head down and you're just like, you're so focused. And that's really what like my life was at that point. Like, I didn't know that we were close to breaking through. I didn't know that we had at least 20 more years left in the tank. I didn't know like that. I was a few years from like buying my first house. I didn't know, you know what I mean? Like, it was just about like, it was about the job at hand, you know? So it's funny. It's like, I remember it so vividly. I could like recount so many like days working on that record and touring on that record, but at the same time, it's a blur somehow, you know?
I feel exactly the same. I, you know, it's like we have our 10-year anniversary coming up, 10 years, like a decade of doing this. And I'm just like trying to find these like core memories. And it is, you know, what you said about being so close to making it, also like that really stuck with me, honestly, like thinking times where you're like, we're so close, but not really. And then when you're not thinking about it and you are, really is a really kind of powerful statement that I don't think it's been expressed that clearly to me, at least.
You just don't know, Like, you just don't know. And like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter either. You know, like, if you're doing something that you love to do, it doesn't matter, you know, like, just keep doing it. Like, something that was so impactful to me is I was talking to Pete Wentz and Amy Lee once, and who, two giants, you know what I mean? Like, giants who have reached points that I don't think I'll ever reach. And I remember asking them, like, when did you know, like, you arrived? And they were like, I still don't know if I have or not, you know? And I was like, fuck, I better stop. Like, I need to stop wondering, you know what I mean? Like, cause if like Amy Lee or Pete Wentz does, like, either didn't realize when they arrived or aren't sure if they have yet, then you're never going to get it. You know, you're never going to get that feeling of like, all right, cool, the finish line, you know, like, yeah. it doesn't exist.
I mean, you know, I feel that very much. It's like, once we were able to do a cool thing, I'm like, this was sick for 5 minutes. And then I'm like, all right, what next? What do we do now? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I find it really like the goal. There's never an end goal if you're doing something that you really, really like and really love, because you can always continuously grow on it and expand on it. And I think that a really nice thing to hear from coming from a guy like you. Yeah. It's really nice, like, to talk to. Yeah.
Yeah. You just, I mean, you know, you're climbing the mountain and you just don't know. You don't know how high it goes. You don't know how, like, you don't really know how far you've come. But like, if you like climbing, just keep fucking climbing. It doesn't matter how tall the mountain is. Like, just climb because you like to climb.
Is there, I hate asking this question, but it's like something that I think is necessary for a format like the way that we're doing, but because it, you know, kind of sounds like a bullshit, like throwaway question, but it actually is a legitimate question. It's like, you know, is there anything that you would change, like listening back to that album or playing these songs for as many years as you have? Like, is there anything that you wish you put down on tape that was different?
I mean, I love the songs still. I was actually just having this conversation over the weekend about how sometimes you listen to your old stuff and, you know, at a certain point, you know too much, right? Like, you've eaten once you've like eaten from the tree of knowledge, like it's hard. Like, there's something special about like that youthful, like, ignorance of like, I can do anything, you know, I'm going to write a song and I can I'm not afraid of anything, you know? So sometimes I do listen to that old stuff and like, I'm like, damn, I can't believe I like had the balls to like say that or write that melody or whatever. But, so I love the music, you know, there is definitely like lyrics on there that I wouldn't write for sure as like, as an adult man in 2024, you know, but at the same time, like, I was a depressed, like, lost, angry kid, you know, and I would like be in a relationship and I would get my heart broken and I would just my instinct was like, fuck you. So I wrote a song about fuck you, you know what I mean? Like, so like, you know, I don't regret writing any of it. I wouldn't write it again. I guess if I, you know, if anything, you know, I do wish that like the musicians that we are now, the singer that I am now, I wish that I could perform it all again. You know what I mean? Like, I, you know, as like kids, we were like hanging on by the skin of our teeth. We were writing outside of our capabilities, you know, we were writing right at the top of our capabilities as musicians, you know? So we were like hanging on by like the skin of our teeth, like to play the parts that we were coming up with. So I do wish I could like, you know, retrack the record, but the songs I'm really proud of. I'm really, really proud of.
That, I mean, that's the thing, is like, it's a weird question because ultimately, you know, that's what people know. And that's like what people listen to and remember. And I don't think that people would be like, I want this to change because this is what I remember. But personally playing the songs live, you're like, it's like sometimes you're just like, fuck, I wish I switched that chord every single time you played it.
I don't think there's anything like that, but there is, like, when I play Devotion and Desire for like the literal 3,000th time now, I listened to the recording. I was like, damn, I wish I could play it with the confidence I have now when I'm playing it, you know?
Well, hell yeah, dude. I mean, I like I said, I really, you know, I was really, really, I'm really impressed with your career. I'm really impressed with your attitude. I'm, you know, it really impressed with the person that you are.
Thanks, man.
And you know, it was really nice to dive into your band, doing this album. So,
yeah, thanks for doing it. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Anthony. And it was good to reconnect. We haven't spoken to each other in a long time, but
yeah, I know it's been a long time. I haven't seen you guys.
Yeah, I'd like to do it not on an interview format.
Yeah.
Call me. Yeah. Call me. It,
dude. I'm a talker, dude. Call you on the way home. Call you on the way home from work. You're going to regret that.
Dude, call me. I could talk all day. I love it.
All right, dude. Well,
cool.
Thank you again,
and have a great day. Thank you. Yeah,
good to see you guys, too, man. Peace.